Good morning. Welcome to the March 8th meeting of the House Committee on Economic Development and Trade. We have a number of important bills before us today regarding port work. And before we move into that, we are going to do a work session on House Bill 2091, which has to do with telecommunications. And Mr. Crawford, if you could, after I open the work session, which is now open, describe briefly what the bill is.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2091 allows the Public Utility Commission to use funding from the Universal Service Fund to encourage broadband and telephone service availability, operative July 1st, 2017, declares an emergency and is effective on passage. The committee is asked to consider a Dash 1 amendment. This Dash 1 amendment limits the Universal Service surcharge to 8.5% of sale of retail telecommunication services, removes the emergency clause, and takes effect on the 91st day after signee die. The Dash 1 amendment has a minimal revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
And I would welcome a motion, please.
Chair Leininger, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated February 23rd, 2017.
Vice Chair Brocksmith moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated February 23rd, 2017. Is there any discussion?
Only to say that these are good amendments.
My phone the other day, and now I've got this growing.
Very nice. Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. Now I would welcome a motion on the bill itself.
Chair Leininger, I move to House Bill 2091 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Brocksmith moves House Bill 2091 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. Representative Clem, would you like to carry this bill?
Sure.
All right. Thank you. All right, now we are going to move into a public I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2899, a port intergovernmental agreement, and I will ask Mr. Crawford to give us a brief discussion of the contents of that bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2899 allows ports to enter into intergovernmental agreements allowed by Oregon Revised Statute Chapter 190.
Thank you very much. I think we may have some folks who plan to come forward and provide context and input, so we'll wait for that. Thank you. All right, and I will invite Mr. Mark Landauer to come forward and provide us with some background. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Leininger, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Public Ports Association of Oregon. Our membership includes 23 of the public ports that exist in the state of Oregon. Just by a little background, if I may, the Oregon Public Ports Association for a couple of years has undertaken a comprehensive review of the statutes that govern the authorities of ports contained in ORS 777. There hasn't really been a comprehensive review of that statute, I believe, since 1995, when some substantial revisions were made during that session in years past. Through our review, we identified a number of shortcomings with the statute that have emerged and evolved over the years, and today we've brought four bills before this committee that address what we thought, frankly, were housekeeping issues. Regrettably, a couple of them have gained some attention, and we'll go through those. House Bill 2899 is the first of those four measures. I am unaware of any controversy with this particular one. Simply put, as you may all know, look, governments, the state, cities, counties, special districts, school boards, so on and so forth, can enter into intergovernmental agreements, and intergovernmental agreements are covered under ORS 190. ORS 190 provides a broad authority to governments to enter into those type of agreements with one another in order to carry out various duties, goals, what have you. The purpose of 2899 is simply to clarify, for the purposes of ports, that they can enter into these broad agreements. If one were to take a look at ORS 777.112, one could believe, or at least be led to believe, that for intergovernmental agreements for ports, they're limited. And they're limited, at least in the statute, for the improvement, maintenance, or of the bays, harbors, channels, shores, and banks. Now, many of our ports have believed that they had the broad authority that is granted under ORS 190. If one were to look at this particular section in the statute, though, one could be led to believe that that authority is quite limited. The purpose of 2899 is simply to ensure that ports have the broad authority that is granted to all other governments that exist. And with that, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Wonderful. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Landauer? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2899, and I'd welcome a motion.
Chairman Hager, I move House Bill 2899 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Brock-Smith moves House Bill 2899 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. And who is the named proponent? Is that Rep. Boone?
Yes.
Rep. Boone, would you like to carry that bill? Wonderful. Thank you. All right. Moving forward, we will now open a public hearing on, can I simultaneously do a public hearing work session?
Just a public hearing.
Okay, on House Bill 2900, Advertising Activities at Ports. And Mr. Crawford, if you could initially describe the bill, and then we'll turn once again to Mr. Landauer and Rep. Boone for context.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2900 allows ports to advertise activities of the port and the activities of others using port facilities.
All right, welcome, Representative Boone. Thanks for being here.
Chair Lanniger and committee members. Deborah Boone, House District 32, the beautiful upper left coast of Oregon. And I just wanted to give a little preamble here. The Coastal Caucus is a long-standing group of special caucus of special people from the coast. And we have, I think it's 8 people, and a new member, Rep. Brock-Smith. We are a bicameral, bipartisan group of legislators, and we talk about issues that affect all of us along the coast, and we act by consensus. If not all of us agrees on something, we don't put our name on it as the Coastal Caucus. People can individually support legislation or issues, but to get a Coastal Caucus, okie dokie, we have to all be in agreement. And you'll see on this bill, we're all listed as sponsors of this bill, 2900. And I was asked early on to sponsor, it was a suite of bills, I think 3 or 4, by Mr. Landauer. Some, you know, needed to have a note to put these in. And we often do that for our constituents and advocates, et cetera. And we've worked with the Ports Association for years, the whole time I've been here as both a member and staff. And so I've been through a lot of different people, and we pretty much agree with, when we agree with what they, when they, a group that big that represents all of our constituency along the coast and sometimes inland a little bit, we know that that's an important bill to them. And so I would ask today, without further ado, that you hear this bill, and when you get to the point where you want to give it a work session, hear it, move it as it is, no amendments. This is what we wanted, and this is what we would like to have. So thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Mr. Landauer, would you like to add to that?
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Mark Landauer, on behalf of the Public Ports Association. House Bill 2900 is a measure that would simply allow broader authority for ports to advertise. The current statute limits ports under ORS 777-240. And the limitation in that particular section of the statute provides that ports may only advertise for the facilities and the commerce that is taking place at the ports. Now, I can assure you that ports undertake a number of other activities related to their community and their various businesses. I'll give you a couple of examples. The Port of Toledo, a subject that we'll come to shortly, actually has a wooden boat show that they sponsor every year down in Toledo. It's a very popular festival, if you will. But statute would limit or does limit them from communicating this or expending any monies to communicate this to the rest of the either community or state. Another example is actually the Port of Portland. The Port of Portland undertakes a rather large fair that's open to the public that educates the public about what the port does as a marine and air service carrier. We would like to simply expand the authority here for the ports in order to be able to communicate not only to the public of other types of activities that they undertake, but also to educate the public about the importance of ports and how they contribute to their community. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for this panel? Yes, please, Rep. Reschy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So advertise, is it specifically spending money or is it broadly defined as promoting?
Good question. I would probably have to take a look at the bill.
Okay.
Or representative, and forgive me for not having that right in
front
of me.
That's okay.
Okay, thank you. We are not quite ready to work this bill today, so we're going to close the public hearing. Thank you so much for being here, and we're going to hold it over, I think, until Monday for a work session. But thank you both for being here. And with that, we are going to open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2901. Mr. Crawford, and you may go sit down if you are interested in that. Could you please briefly describe this, and then we'll turn again to Mr. Landauer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2901 changes the threshold of real property value on which a port is required to obtain a second appraisal before purchasing from $500,000 to $2 million.
Okay, thank you. Welcome back.
Madam Chair, again for the record, Mark Landauer on behalf of the Oregon Public Ports Association. House Bill 2900 is a pretty straightforward bill. ORS 777116 deals with ports that are attempting to purchase property. Under the current statute, when a port is considering purchasing a property, the statute requires, and properly so, that the port obtain an evaluation, or I should say an appraisal, from a certified appraiser. Okay? If that appraisal comes in over $500,000, the port is required to get a second appraisal from a certified appraiser. Now, mind you, some of our ports are in rather rural areas. I can certainly think of the Port of Brookings Harbor, Port of Umatilla, so on forth. Some of them are quite small, the Port of Nehalem, so on and so forth. They really struggle at times when they get an appraisal in excess of $500,000 to obtain a second appraisal. So what we're simply trying to do is increase that threshold of $500,000 to $2 million in order to assist some of our ports to actually be able to be compliant and get a second appraisal when it's needed. $500,000 today is nothing like it was, as you can imagine, 20-some-odd years ago. We're simply trying to update this particular part of the statute, and with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Reschy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Landauer. Do you know when the threshold was set at $500,000? You referenced 20 years or so, but do you know?
I did not conduct Madam Chair, forgive me, Representative Reschke, I did not conduct an extensive review. We know that the threshold has not been increased at least since 1995.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, and because we are already in a work session, I'd welcome a motion on this one.
Chair Leininger, I move House Bill 2901 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Brocksmith moves House Bill 2901 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. Representative Gomberg, would you like to carry this bill? It is chief sponsored by Representative Boone. If she would like to take it, that would be great.
And if not, I'll be happy to carry it, Madam Speaker.
So we'll clear that up as the time for this hearing passes. All right, thank you. So we're moving on to the final House bill in this suite of four port-related House bills. And we will open a hearing and work session on House Bill 2902. Mr. Crawford, could you briefly describe that, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2902 allows ports to acquire, construct, maintain, and operate shipyards.
Wonderful. And we have here Chief Sponsor Representative Gomberg to give us some background, and then we will ask again Mr. Landauer to weigh in.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. Good morning, colleagues. For the record, David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon coast. Madam Chair, there are 23 public ports in Oregon, five of them in my district, and many of those ports are currently operating shipyards. We have an opinion from Legislative Council that indicates, then, with some confidence, that they're perfectly entitled to operate those shipyards, and should that be challenged in court, that they would in all likelihood prevail. But my guys don't want to spend a lot of time and money in court prevailing, and so they asked me to bring this measure forward. That's a pretty simple and straightforward measure, but I have to tell you that nothing in the Capitol is ever as simple as straightforward as you originally anticipate, and the measure has garnered a little bit more attention than I had originally anticipated. And in all candor, it's gathered some attention because some of the people who sold a shipyard to the Port of Toledo now object to them using that shipyard. And the opposition is focused on the unfair nature, they argue, of competition between public ports and private enterprise. And I will tell you that I'm generally sympathetic to that argument, that that private enterprise shouldn't have to compete with government entities or organizations with a tax base. But I believe that ports are a deliberate and important exception to that issue. And I'll just give you some examples of the kind of things that our ports are already doing. Our ports operate marinas. They operate RVs. They do dredging operations. They operate tugboats, barges, other watercraft for the transportation of all kinds of merchandise, freight, and commercial or recreational passengers. They engage in general maritime trade and commerce, operate railroad terminals and rail yards, short line railroads, and unit trains. Bear with me. They operate water transportation lines, ferries, and boat landings. They operate warehouses, storehouses, grain elevators, grain bins, and various other facilities for handling, packing, storing, and transporting freight. They operate ice plants, power plants, electrical transmission lines, cableways, conveyors, and telecommunication facilities. I'm almost done. They operate fishing terminals and fish processing, canning, and packing facilities, operate sports facilities, recreational facilities, convention and trade show facilities. They operate a number of different activities which would appear to compete with private enterprise. And I will tell you that nothing in Chapter ORS 777 explicitly or implicitly prohibits a port from competing with private enterprise. In fact, the ports are explicitly authorized to engage in activities that are almost certain to compete with private enterprise. Now, this is the case at the Port of Toledo, where the previous operator of the boatyard closed shop in 2008. The state has subsequently spent several millions of dollars to acquire, retool, and reactivate the facility, and in addition spent significant investments in environmental remediation stemming from pollution of the previous operator's activities. This facility in Toledo is critical to the efficient operation and safety of the Newport and Depot Bay commercial and recreational fishing fleet, as well as the NOAA fleet and OSU research vessels. As you know, Newport is the largest commercial and recreational fishing fleet on the Oregon coast. I would say also that the boatyard serves as a critical open facility for at least 40 private sector firms who provide a range of services to the maritime community. I should also emphasize while I'm on the record that the Port of Toledo did not want to take on the responsibility for operating this facility initially, but have done so for the good of our communities and because there was no willing private sector buyer when the last owner closed shop. Port personnel operate the boat lift. They conduct sand and water blasting services as well as painting for the vessels they haul out. This is to ensure that the type of pollution which occurred under the previous owner does not reoccur. So, colleagues, I've given you a long, long list of things that ports are doing that would appear to compete with private enterprise. I mean, we could eliminate all those things. Or we could adopt amendments to this simple measure today that would prevent the Port of Toledo from moving forward with what they're currently doing. I hope we don't do that. I think that while I recognize the concerns that opponents are raising, I think their opposition is out of proportion with the facts. And I'd urge the committee to send this bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thanks very much. Mr. Landauer.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Gomberg has really summarized this measure quite adequately. With your indulgence, if I may, I would simply like to invite a couple of our port managers up to the dais to perhaps add a little meat to the bone, and obviously we'll wait for a moment.
First, we'll invite questions of this panel. Representative Brock-Smith.
Thank you. And thank you for your testimony, Representative. Can you also add, especially with the uniqueness of the Port of Toledo being up the river, what are the safety concerns for our fishers with regards to the abilities that are in services offered in this specific
Well, the director of the port is here, and he's going to be able to provide a lot more detail to that. But I want to say again that we've got Newport, which is the largest commercial and recreational fleet on the Oregon coast, which is directly upstream. And when they need those haul-out operations, when they need those repairs, Toledo is a quick motor upstream rather than crossing the jaws and a lengthy trip someplace else.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Representative Reschy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Gomberg. So let me just go back to some of your testimony. This bill is to basically define for certainty in statute whether ports can operate shipyards, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Reschke, yes, they have been operating shipyards. This clarifies that there's no conflict or problem with them continuing to do so.
A follow-up?
Yes, please.
Thank you. So let's go the other direction. If this bill does not pass, and if there is litigation, and if those litigators win, does that mean that ports would not be able to operate shipyards in Oregon and would have to close down?
Mr. Landauer is over here nodding his head. I think the short answer to that is yes, that the multi-million-dollar investments that we made, particularly at the Port of Toledo, would stand idle since they hadn't been able to find anybody previously to get involved there, and the likelihood that they could in the future would be quite uncertain.
If I may, Madam Chair, I again, Representative Reschke, I think that Representative Gomberg's statement is correct, although obviously we would have to take a much closer look at what any court would say in a ruling. Ports typically operate haul out with boat lifts and then block the vessels, and that in it. Is a necessary task that port personnel do. We simply don't want some boat captain to be operating a 660-ton haul-out for the first time and potentially have a catastrophic event with not only the ship but the personnel operating the equipment. So, again, we would have to take a close look at what a court would rule.
All right. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much. All right. Thank you both. Any other questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you both for being here, and I will begin calling up some individuals to provide their input. And Mr. Landauer, we can welcome you back up if you have any follow-up comments.
Indeed. Thank you. I do have to testify in another committee down the hallway this morning, so I do apologize. I would commend, though, that we have the general managers from the Port of Coos Bay and the Port of Toledo who can provide a great deal more meat to the bone, if you will, on this matter. So thank you very much, for hearing these measures, and again, we certainly hope that you will move these forward in the process. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, we will actually call forward John Burns of the Port of Coos Bay and Bud Shoemake, thank you so much, of the Port of Toledo, as well as Jonathan Wright, the City of Reedsport, please. You may speak in any order, but please begin by stating your name for the record.
Go ahead, John.
Jonathan Wright, City of Reedsport. I'll defer to these gentlemen first. My PowerPoint's on the other side there. So.
Here, let's switch here.
Okay, either way, we can do that.
Okay. All right, Mr. Wright, I'd actually, why don't you go ahead and start, please?
Okay. My apologies, Madam Chair, for the musical chair situation here. Jonathan Wright, City of Reedsport. Donna? We definitely have some concerns over this bill. I'm going to try to make this as short and concise as possible because I know we have a lot of people that would like to also speak. I do have some questions Representative Gomberg's statements, one of them being that ports already operate shipyards. He then went into every detail of ORS 777.210, which includes the activities that are allowed, but none of them specify a shipyard. That is the matter at issue today, and that's the discussion that we're trying to have. The other thing that was stated was that the fleets are necessary, or it's necessary for the fleets of Newport. Currently, Reedsport Shipyard serve 25% of that fleet. So, moving on. Ports do some outstanding work. They put in infrastructure necessary for business-type activities to occur. I want to draw the attention, though, that some of these business activities that are taken on by ports have consequences. And, for example, the Charleston 100-ton lift that was recently put in, that is a great addition to the Charleston yard. However, there was already a commercial venture there that was providing that service. Now, you're probably going to hear that there was some mechanical issues with it. However, the individual is here that actually operates that, and he felt that his lift was capable of providing that service. More to the point is upriver, the next port up is the Port of Umpqua. There is a shipyard that has a similar lift already, and now that shipyard has been impacted by this travel lift because they're able to offer their services less than what the business rate is. And in turn, that's actually caused some issues with the services of vessels that they would commonly provide to different vessel fleet owners, because now they're going someplace else going, wait a minute, you're charging me more, so now I'm going to go over to this yard, and they've lost those contracts. So we know you people are far smarter than I am, but I put together just a brief PowerPoint here showing that, you know, the difference obviously between public and private entities. I hope Representative Gomberg has a sense of humor. I used a kite company. And so you see the difference at the top there between what you'd sell the average kite per kite is $2.50 for the public sector and $5.40 for the private. And that's just simple math. That's based on the overhead cost of operating with rent, electric, and one personnel. The difference you'll see there is that one is there to make a profit. And I know that the ports will argue, well, they want to make profit too. But one specifically is designed to make profit and also doesn't have the additional liabilities of property tax, personal property tax, or income tax. So you see that there's a substantial difference, and that's just used as an example. So when you look at different the cost for operating a shipyard, a private shipyard, let's take this one for example. This is the Fredwell Marine Expansion Project. That's a $9 million project. $9 million levies almost $100,000 annually in property tax. That is a significant tax liability that operation takes on in order to provide the services necessary for the fleets, the same services that the ports are attempting to provide. I use this as an example, and in your packet that you should have in front of you, there's a letter from the Port of Umpqua, and I'd like to refer to that letter. That letter specifies that they've been working with a marine operator for some time. They started the 7-acre site on the right-hand side many years ago. They purchased the site as an economic development project. They leased it to an operator, and then they put in the dock system that you see there to help facilitate the operation, and that has grown. That has grown substantially. Over the last 30 years, it has grown to the point where they finally expanded over to Bolin Island. So now what we have is a 45-acre operation, which is one of the largest shipyards on the Pacific coast. And that shipyard, again, it cost about $9 million to improve. And the nexus there was because of the need for additional services with the fleets. And you're going to hear about the need for additional services. And this is our attempt to try to meet those needs. In fact, the city of Reedsport co-authored a grant, a Connect Oregon grant, for $3.4 million to put in the infrastructure necessary to expand the operational capacity. They're currently at 110 employees, and we think they can go much higher. The Port of Umpqua is the largest small port in the state. So if you look at the Port of Toledo's certified draft, they're at 10 feet. The certified draft for the Port of Umpqua is 26 feet. That means that we can move wave energy devices, full-scale wave energy devices, in and out of there, and much larger freight and infrastructure. So this area is ideally situated for this type of use, and the city, the Port of Umpqua, the community, which is here today, has been helping to kind of push this along in the interest of economic development. Those of you that have driven through the city of Reed's Porting Time recently realize that the timber industry hit us hard. We estimate with the loss of IP, we lost 991 jobs all at one point, and that was a decade ago. We've never recovered. This is our first opportunity to kind of notice gains, and I know I'm being long-winded. I'm trying not to. So we have the bill today. We have the supporters. We have the OPPA. We have some ports. We have some state representatives. And you have a whole industry that's against this bill. And whether you want to argue that it's just something that they can do or not, you have a bunch of people that realize that they are going to be adversely impacted. These are people that live on this. This is the city that then economically benefits from it. It's the port that then sustains it. It's all these folks. And you also have some ports that are against it and some local government officials. So should they operate shipyards? That's one thing. And I notice there's going to be a difference in operate, because they kind of, or Representative Gomberg kind of touched on that. What does operate mean? Boat landings are provided for in statute. If you're hauling a boat out of the water and setting it down, that's a boat landing. So as soon as somebody comes over and starts welding on it, that's a shipyard. That's the difference between that. And we're not arguing with the fact that somebody qualified needs to take the boats out of the water, set them up, but at that point, let the private industry do it. And I know that Bud's going to talk about it a little bit, all the contractors they have. Well, let the contractors do the work. Don't hire as a governmental entity the people that'll do the work, because if you quit a boat that doesn't have the capacity to take on the vessel coming in, guess who's going to do the work? And guess who's going to continue to do the work? It's not going to be the private sector. And I work for the government, which is sad to say. So if you look at the list here, these are all the boats that were built in Oregon. We build more fishing vessels 50 foot and greater than anybody else in the nation. Right. Anybody else in the nation. So you've seen the Deadliest Catch. You've seen the boats out there. Those are boats that were manufactured in Oregon. Those are our boats. Those are the boats that we make in Reedsport. Those are the boats that we make in Charleston. That's the list of boats right there. Now, you're going to look at it, and it says they can construct vessels, any type of vessels. If you look at this market, we are an industry leader only because we build 1 to 2 vessels a year. That's not a huge market. But we're the industry leader because we do the most and we do it best. So you want to compare RV parks and harbors and ice plants to what goes on at a shipyard. It's very different. They're business type activities, granted, but it's a very different market. There's classing, there's engineering, there's a ton of things that go into it, all providing different types of jobs, both for private industry businesses and contractors. And we're hoping that today we have an opportunity to maybe look at this section of the statute and go, is this really a good idea? We have this opportunity today to say, okay, what they're saying is already kind of in there. We have ability to make it prescriptive. What should they be doing with this type of use? Any questions? I'm sorry, I got long-winded.
Thank you so much. Any questions for this witness? Okay, thank you. Gentlemen?
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commission. My name is John Burns, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the International Port of Coos Bay. I come here today to voice the Port of Coos Bay staff and Commission's strong support for the bill as it is currently written. Throughout the years, the Port of Coos Bay has found itself in a position where we have had to be the lifeline for our community. Mr. Wright talked about ice plants. Several years ago, the ice plant that was in place in Charleston, the owner walked away. It could have had devastating consequences on the fishing fleet, which is the third largest in the state of Oregon. The Port of Coos Bay stepped in, took over running that ice plant, and today we continue to operate that. The short line railroad that runs from Coquille to Eugene was abandoned by its owners. The Port of Coos Bay was called upon to step in and resurrect that short line railroad. We certainly hope that we can continue to have wonderful partnerships like we have with our existing tenants in Giddings Marine, Tar Heel Marine, and Skalaroo Marine, who utilize the infrastructure facility, which is in Charleston, which is owned by the Port of Coos Bay. That said, however, we have always got to be on the lookout for potential problems in the future. And there is nothing to say that any or all three of those current operators would choose to vacate that premise at any given point in time. We truly hope they don't. They do wonderful work. They do great support for the fishing community. But if that were to happen, the Port of Coos Bay needs the option to do what is necessary to continue to support that fleet. We've owned that shipyard since 1987. We've been very fortunate in that time to have very good shipbuilders and repair facilities. We do certain things at the Port of Coos Bay, such as lift boats. We do bottom washes. We do store vessels. We do let vessel owners do repairs when they're in the dry yard. We would continue to work with both the vessel owners and the people who operate in that shipyard to make it as viable as possible in the future. Again, we have no intent, no desire to run a shipyard, but we need the absolute protection to do that should it be called upon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Burns. Mr. Shoemake.
Okay, Madam Chair. My name is Bud Shoemake. I'm the port manager in Toledo, Oregon. I've been there about 13 years now. I've been involved in ports for a lot of years, and I actually worked for Fred at one time. So Fred and I go back a ways, and what I'd like to say about Port of Toledo and Port of Newport and Depot Bay, we are linked by our waterways. We are the only shipyard in our area. There's 1,400 slips in Newport, and Newport is home to the largest distant water fleet, second only to Seattle in the number of boats. When Fred shut the boatyard down, he told us that he was no longer going, he was going to only be building boats and no longer going to be maintaining our fleet. So we stepped in because no private sector did. And we operated as an open boatyard. We've got 41 licensed vendors, marine vendors that work out of the yard. And Yaquina Boat, Kevin Hill, just a number of them. And we take on projects together. There are certain aspects of the yard that we went through DEQ technical assistance, and controlling the waste stream is everything in a boatyard. You know, you're seeing a shrinkage of boatyards up and down the entire coast, one in up in Astoria right now that is shutting down. And I've personally, on the Yaquina system, had four different boat yards with environmental problems. And we are now their last remaining one. We cleaned up the mess that was there. We signed a consent order with DEQ to do that. And so there are certain aspects that when it comes to the haul-outs, the power washing, removing the bottom paint, the sandblasting and the spray painting, we control that because controlling that waste stream, we won't be there in 5 years if we allow it to be abused. So that's really important to us. You know, I said it before, but we are an open boat yard. Vendors are welcome to sign up and work out of our boatyard. They'd have to be licensed and do the appropriate paperwork and have the insurance, but we do not discriminate like that. So we we were put in the position because that's what ports do. We do things lots of times that the private sector won't do to keep the businesses going around us. So the marine sector businesses, you know, along with the fishermen, we have a real a really good group of marine vendors. I chaired the Yaquina Bay Marine Trades Commission. I spent 15 years with the Port of Newport. I left in 96, but we chaired a committee that of marine vendors that we marketed together. We went up to Comfish in Kodiak, threw a banquet for the Newport fishermen. I went to Fish Expo. We got Governor Roberts' first economic development reward, or award, not reward. But it's important to our area that we have a shipyard, and if it hadn't been for the Port of Toledo stepping in, I don't know what we'd have done. It you know, you asked about how important shipyards are to being able to haul out in your local harbor. It's everything. Your insurance companies that insure those boats don't like not having an emergency haul out, and we do two or three emergencies every year. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Baumberg.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I had an observation to share, and I wanted to do that before this panel left in case they wanted to comment on it. I particularly appreciate the remarks all of you have shared, but in particular, Mr. Wright, I appreciated your overview and your sense of humor. My own kite company moves forward with my own kite dollars. You mentioned the $9 million that is being spent on Bolton Island to do improvements there. What you omitted to mention is that amongst those $9 million is $3.4 million of Connectorian money, that is public dollars. So it seemed to me that we're trying to have it both ways down there, that we don't want to compete with government-funded entities, but we're happy to take government dollars to operate our own facility. Help me understand that.
Well, first you were talking about identifying the tax piece. Now they're going to be paying all the taxes on that $9 million infrastructure forever until it's done, and some of the other ones that receive funds will not. So was that the answer? I understand you're spending your own dollars for your kite company, but we as tax entities also have additional sources of revenue, and we'll always say that we don't have enough dollars to go around, but these folks would really like to have those additional revenues to fall back on if they could. They have to sustain off their business operations. Did I answer your question?
Madam Co-Chair, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I'm used to operating over in Ways and Means where we have COs. No, I think maybe my point wasn't entirely clear. You talked about the $9 million investment, and I'm saying that a third of that investment was public dollars. So you're not entirely private enterprise that's competing with a public enterprise. You're a one-third funded public dollar enterprise that's competing with a government enterprise. So I think the comparison's not entirely as distinct as you had offered it.
I'm still missing your point.
Well, I thought it was a helpful point. Thank you so much. Are there additional comments? Representative Lewis,
thank you,
please.
Madam Chair. For the poor manager from Toledo, you mentioned cleanup costs that the port had to do. Can you tell us how much that cost you?
That was about $660,000, not counting our contribution to the cleanup, the port's personal contribution.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you. Mr. Burns, it's good to see you again. How are you?
See you.
So I have, five ports, four ports in my district, excuse me, Brookings, Gold Beach, Port Orford, Bandon, and I kind of share Coos Bay, you know, because of Charleston and so forth. And so three of those ports operate shipyards. So this has been a bill that has been very concerning to me because of what was discussed earlier with regards to litigation. And I think one of the concerns that has come up was that the Port of Toledo might be interested in building ships in the future. Is the Port of Toledo or your Port Commission ever discussed building ships?
No.
Mr. Burns, is the Port of Coos Bay and the Port Commission of Coos Bay ever discussed building ships?
Not to my knowledge.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I still have.
Please, go ahead.
Thank you. And how many vessels, when the port of Toledo was really forced to purchase the shipyard and the necessary equipment to run the shipyard for as many years as they have until recently, how many vessels did you serve and do you serve?
We serve a little over 100 vessels a year.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then, Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
Thank you. And when having to purchase the shipyard to provide these services to your fishers there, how many positions did the port itself have to add to the payroll to provide services? I'm sure, having been in local government and county commissioner and so forth, we try to, I don't want to say outsource, but we try to use as much public, private industry as we can, because we're not in the business of wanting to be in the business. And so how many positions did you have to add to provide those services to yours?
Immediately on opening day, we had 4 or 5 positions, and that quickly grew to about 10 just to try to make it work. And we kind of were backed into operating at a different level because of the need. So,
and then
go ahead.
Thank you, mm-hmm. Madam Chair. And then, so I imagine your organization in the Port of Toledo is running this operation similar to not make a profit. They aren't attempting you're basically employing people, generating the revenue to cover your expenses, infrastructure repair and maintenance of the facility, and so on and so forth. You're not in the situation of driving the for-profit.
Everything that we have made, we put right back into the facility and the people. So I think John said it at one of his meetings that it was not a good decision for Fred to go to Toledo. And a good business is the way you suggested, and that's why he left. So we stepped in to, and with a lot of help from the state and, Connect Oregon, who I really appreciate, we were able to build the facility.
And Madam Chair, we're in a situation where there's been millions of public dollars that have been invested into this port to provide services to the fishers of Newport and surrounding areas. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is there an estimate on how many millions of public dollars have been invested into this?
I can give you a ballpark real quick, and that's about $8 million.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for coming to testify. What I'm trying to grapple with here, and what I see is the fundamental question that we deal with every day is, what's the proper role of government, right? And we have 9 representatives up here, and you'd probably get 12 answers to that question on any issue. We have public roads, and we have public utilities, but we have private food distribution, and we have private clothing, and private hair and nail care, and private this, that. So the question in my mind is, where does shipyards fit in that matrix? And to help me understand that question, if the government didn't fulfill this role, is there pent-up demand right now for private entities to come in and fill that need?
Is it?
That's to all of you, whoever wants to answer that.
John, you start.
Mr. Burns.
Madam Chairman, Representative, I would venture to say that if just to go to the gentleman to my right that when the facility closed in Toledo, there were no takers. So I think that talks to you about the pent-up demand for someone to move in and occupy that business. That is my underlying concern, is that should we be faced in the future of not having a capable, competent person like we have today running that shipyard, and that shipyard was re-delivered to us, and the ability to continue to support the fishing fleet and the recreational fleet, as well as to protect the investments that have been made in that facility by the taxpayers, I think it's imperative, again, that I don't know that there's necessarily a line of people waiting to get into these businesses. It's like everything else. There's major consolidation. You start getting bigger and bigger entities, which start to push out the smaller operators.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I actually have a question myself. As a newcomer to this situation, some of our Coastal Caucus members and others are aware of this situation from other work that they've done. But as a newcomer, I've heard kind of an astonishing sequence of events, and I just want to see if you could help me confirm if that's the case. It's my understanding that the port, the shipyard, was purchased by the port from a person who now, to be operated as a shipyard, from a seller who now strongly opposes the idea of that very same public entity to which he sold the port operating the facility for the purpose for which it was acquired. Am I mistaken in understanding that? It's sort of hard to understand.
I can speak to that. That is correct. You know, we purchased it from Fred Wall. Fred, it was about $1.5 million cash with about a $3 million tax credit. Plus, we assumed the consent agreement for the cleanup of the property. So, yes.
So that you also used your resources, public resources, to clean up the pollution on the property that was residual from the prior owner who now opposes
right.
the port from operating a facility for the purpose for which right. it was sold.
To clarify, there was a floating dry dock there, and so it was Fred had leased the submerged property for the floating dry dock, so the contamination came from that floating dry dock.
Got it.
And that's what we cleaned up.
Thank you. Thanks very much. All right.
Chairman? Madam Chair, may I have a quick piece there?
Sure. We are starting to be very short on time, so each of the remaining speakers will have to speak for no more than 3 minutes so that we'll have time to take care of the remaining business, but you're welcome to
continue talking. I just want to clarify, because I can't speak to the Toledo-Fred thing. The way we look at it from a local government perspective is there's 23 ports out there that could potentially open shipyards, build ships, do all those things that are specified in this bill. That's the concern. It's not with Toledo. It's not with the amount of money invested. It's who's doing the work at Toledo. It's who's doing the work at Coos Bay. It's all those things that are to come in the future, and that was it. We're not involved in any tension between Fred Wall and Toledo. I'm trying to look at this big picture long term for our community and for our area. So I just want to say that.
I sure appreciate that. As someone who has formerly been a county commissioner and who actually formerly worked for a company that does ship manufacture, it's an interesting situation to analyze from so many perspectives. Thank you so much. Gentlemen, we appreciate your being here today, and we'll invite you to return to your seats. And and as I mentioned, we don't have very much time left, and we have quite a number of individuals who have signed up to testify. So I'm going to proceed in the order in which people have signed up, but we are going to stop testimony at right about 9:30 so that we can move forward with this bill and other matters before the committee. So with that, I would like to invite Mr. Rich Patton and D.D. Murphy and Linda McCollum forward to please provide your testimony.
Madam Chair, I am here to support the community, not to speak.
Okay, thank you so much. And are you Rich Patton?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. All right, Ms. D.D. Murphy, Ms. Linda McCollum, and Mr. Ray Cox, please.
Thank you.
Looks like we're missing one, but we're very thankful to have the two of you here with us.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Councillor Murphy is here. She's just going to refer to Mayor McCollum for
okay. Thank you, Mayor, for being here, and thank you, Councillor.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, committee members. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak. My name's Linda McCollum. I'm the mayor of Reedsport. Excuse me. And my chief concern in this is, in a 30-mile area, we have four or five shipbuilders. And any competition is good. I'm not against the competition, as long as it's fair competition. And what we're concerned about is the fact that this isn't fair competition. And this would greatly affect the communities that that we live in. And we're struggling to get over the recession. It has hit us hard, and we still are not fully back. And having any of the shipyards, we have three in Reedsport that do this type of work, could certainly hurt us. So this is all we ask, is that they have fair competition. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. I'm from Coos Bay. I operate and lease a shipyard from the Port of Coos Bay. And I'm against this bill because I've poured my heart and soul into this business that I'm leasing from the port. I've been leasing for 15, 16 years. I own two businesses there. Well, my son, which we'll speak earlier in a little bit, he owns one of them now. I sold it to him. So it's a family organization, two separate businesses. And I feel as though, like, I could have the rug pulled out from under me. In my whole life's ambition is just hanging, you know, hanging there in somebody else's power to take it away. And it's kind of a scary situation. I should not be here today. I'm missing a manager. I just hired a manager. One of my managers retired. So I just hired one 3 days into it, and I'm here today. This is important to me. I have no, you know, I don't want to leave the area. I have no plans of just quitting, up and quitting, like Mr. Burns says. Sometimes I feel like it because I haven't had any support from the Port of Coos Bay in all these years. Hopefully, John Burns, I'm pretty happy with how things are going as opposed to before. We're working together better. So I have a positive attitude towards that. I think things are going to go better. But then this comes along. See where I'm coming from? In my shoes, it's a little scary. I didn't want to take over Giddings Boat Works. It was 9 years ago. I took it over because I was asked to take it over. It was going to go away. And it had seven employees at that time. I brought it up and started building boats again. We built two boats in 2013. And we got another one, the biggest boat ever built there, starting in a couple weeks. And I have no intentions of leaving. I want to work with the Port of Coos Bay. All these other ports are getting all this grants and all this, and I'm doing everything with my money. They did buy a 100-ton travel lift and put mine out of business. They did do that. So it's already starting. That's scary, too. So that's my position.
Thank you. You know, if you could please note your name for the record. I think we may have missed that step at the beginning of your testimony, and then it looks like we have at least one question.
Okay, it's Ray Cox.
Thank you. Thanks for making the trip here, too. Representative Broxman.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Thank you so much for being here. And I understand, coming from private business in the public sector, I was a council president and county commissioner. You heard Mr. Burns say earlier that the Port Commission, of course, has no interest in, nor have they ever discussed building boats, building ships. And so I think, and then of course we've heard testimony from the Port of Toledo where they had to step in to fill a need, you know. But you did say something towards the end of your testimony with regards to grant dollars coming
coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious, Mr. Cox, are you concerned that the project in Reesport that is going to be building ships, that's competing against you, just got $3.4 million of taxpayer grant dollars?
Yeah, I'm concerned with that. I'm concerned with Toledo, which is totally government funded. But they're already taking some of my, I can name some boats that they've already got. They were my customers. Now they're going to Toledo. So I've already lost customers already. I've lost customers to Fred Wall, too, because of this new travel lift. I'm able to pull one boat at a time. That's it. Because I have a railways. And if it's a substantial, you know, job, I can sideshift them on rail, on wheels and stuff. And but it has to be a substantial job. It's a couple of days each way to do that with multiple men, when they can just pick up a boat and move it over and set it down and work, start working on it. I've been trying to fight for what Fred Wall has and what Toledo was doing way before they even started what they were doing. 9 years ago, I was fighting for this, telling them, I'll buy the travel lift. You put me a spot to run it. You own the place. I didn't get anywhere. And maybe I wasn't pulling the right strings. I don't know. But yeah, it concerns me. I'm losing. I'm in a unique situation. I'm losing business to both right now because of that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it. All right. Next up, we have Deborah Yates and Jim Zimmer. We'll invite you two up, and then we'll have a final panel of Kyle Cox and Kevin Mannix.
I submitted a letter of testimony, so I won't.
You're all set? Okay, thanks so much. All right, we have then a panel that is Jim Zimmer, Kyle Cox, and Kevin Mannix, please.
These are good people.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for coming here today. Looks like you came from over 100 miles, so we appreciate your making the trip.
I'm Kyle Cox, came from Charleston. I currently bought a business for my dad, Tar Heel Aluminum, and we build boats. We just launched a boat last week. There's a lot of concerns about this bill that we have, mostly the unfair competition. If I can, and it's not even the build boat building side of it, it's a lot of the repairs is more concerning. Like they said, they have no interest in building boats. And that, right now, they might not have any interest in building boats. Maybe later they would. But right now, they're repairing and maintaining vessels. And that's the difference in operating a shipyard that we're talking about. When you're repairing and maintaining, that's what we call a shipyard, and operating a shipyard. Lifting boats and putting them on the ground for somebody else to repair and maintain is one thing. But actually taking over a private business that private people can do, and we've been doing very well, that's the difference, and that's the line we want to draw. Allow these ports to pull boats. Allow them to wash them. Allow them to put them on the ground. Allow them to paint if necessary to keep environmental reasons. There's nothing wrong with that. Allow them to bring in other people, private businesses, to come in and provide the facility to do work. Why does the government actually need to do that work when there's 41 private businesses in Toledo going in there and doing that work? Why do they need to have additional crew of 5 or 10 people to do that work? They don't need to be in that competition. There's no reason for it. You know, there's, like they said, there's ample people going there, ample contractors. There's 41, they said, that's registered with their port in Toledo to do the work. Why do they need to do the work? Is there a reason? You know, I mean, let them pull the boats. Let them provide the facility. Let the private people do the work. You know, there's no reason that they need to do it. They're providing an extra 5 or 10 guys. What's the reason for it? You know, there's more than enough contractors to do it. And that's the point that we're trying to make. We're trying to draw that line somewhere. And we need to draw that line, or else it'll just keep getting pushed further and further. You know, we're here amending a bill. You know, maybe last year they added something else that pushed the line further and pushed it further, and next year they'll add another thing that pushes it a little further. We want to kind of put a line somewhere so it quits enveloping us and pushing us further back and hurting private industry. And I think that's really important to draw that line somewhere.
Thank you. I appreciate your comment. Mr. Mannix, would you like to go next?
Could I have Mr. Zimmer go first?
Sure.
I'll do cleanup.
Good morning, Chair Leninger, members of the committee. I'm here to state my concerns over House Bill 2902 that would allow ports to acquire, construct, maintain, and operate shipyards. You've heard a little bit about us. I'm with Fred Wall Marine Construction, and I was kind of hoping it wouldn't be an us-against-them thing today, but it turns out I may have to defend ourselves a little bit. Anyway, about 60% of our revenues come from repairs to commercial fishing boats. We're primarily, our clients are from the West Coast and Alaska. 40% of our revenue is from new builds. Some would lead you to believe that we're just boat builders, but we're not. Over half of our revenue is from repairs. As boat owners ourselves, we recognize the need to be able to haul out when scheduling permits, and that there's a major cost and life safety issue if you're not able to, if you have to defer that maintenance. We also appreciate it may be necessary for public funding to provide the facilities if they're not already available, whether that be a haul out facility, an ice plant, maybe a railroad. What we don't understand or agree with is the need for a public port to operate facilities for constructing, repairing, or maintaining any type of watercraft. We're not talking ships. We're talking every type of watercraft, from jet skis to whatever. If it floats, the port will be able to maintain it or repair or build. It's not unusual for port-owned properties up and down the West Coast and Alaska to provide the facilities required for to haul out boats. Some ports, they actually perform the haul out and blocking, as you've heard before. Some of the testimony I've heard today made it sound like ports are already operating shipyards or repair facilities. I would argue that ports, with the exception of Toledo, are operating haul out facilities. So, anyway, some ports lease the entire facility to a private contractor to run. We were in that position originally when we moved to Reedsport 27 years ago. What is unusual is, as well as unnecessary, is having port employees performing the repairs to these boats. These services are traditionally completed by local contractors when a port operates a haul-out facility. If you look at Coos Bay, for example, you have Giddings Boat Works, Tar Heel Aluminum, A&R Industries, Scalarud Marine, private industries that can use that haul-out facility to perform maintenance on boats. In Toledo, you got Hill Marine Services, Yaquina Boat Equipment, and Reedsport, you have Reedsport Machine and us. These are all private contractors who perform boat repairs. It's one thing to have to compete amongst ourselves, but why should we have to compete with a public subsidized entity? And I better address the public subsidy deal. We are grateful that we received a $3.4 million grant from Connect Oregon. It's basically the only way that we could compete with our other public subsidized shipyards. We have, when you count the cost of the land and the infrastructure improvements that we made with company funds, we'll have about $9 million into that. And then when Connect Oregon's done, the total project will be a little over $12 million with that $3.4 million. So it's a significant private investment. It's not a bunch of money that was given to us to build a shipyard. I heard, as Bud said, I guess I can see where DEQ or environmental regulations can be a concern. I wasn't with the company, so I can't testify to previous history with the Port of Toledo sale or cleanup or any of that. But I find it odd that the Port of Toledo is the only port, to my knowledge, that is required to do their own painting. It seems to me a port, we're not asking ports to not be good landlords. You can be a good landlord and maintain and make sure that your tenants follow best management practices, whether that comes to painting, sandblasting, welding, whatever. And let's see, there was a couple more things I wanted to address. John Burns mentioned that the Port of Coos Bay would need the ability to operate that shipyard if something were to happen to Tar Heel or Giddings. I would argue that they don't need the ability to perform boat repairs. They need the ability to haul out Boat Basin. Nobody's arguing that. There are private contractors in the area that would fulfill the need to repair those boats. The port doesn't need to go there. All right, and finally, I would just kind of like to say that I was reviewing ports' web pages recently, and I stumbled on one that its mission statement is exactly how I feel. And it reads, create economic development and quality jobs by retaining and growing businesses. Maintain and add waterborne and land transportation infrastructure that attracts new businesses. I believe that's where ports should be focused. That mission statement says it. Attract new businesses, not compete with the businesses that are already there. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I would be happy to answer questions.
Excellent. Thank you. So, Mr. Mannix, if you could keep your remarks to 5 minutes, then we'll have the opportunity for questions. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kevin Mannix. I'm a Salem attorney. I'm here on behalf of an organization I created within the last 3 weeks, which is the West Coast Trades Association. I did it because I heard from several companies concerned about this legislation, and I thought it best to create an association. 15 months ago, dealing with the Port of Portland and their container shipping situation, we created what is now known as the Oregon Shipping Group, and we're dealing with transportation issues in regard to moving freight. This seemed to be a more specialized set of issues relating to our marine ports and how they operate, so now we're moving with this association. And so far we have 5 members, but I'm really speaking for myself as I speak to this committee today because we don't have a board or anything else right now to create policy. I came into this, though, at the request of several businesses from the Reesport area, and again, I'm not representing any one of them other than my own entity, Oregon Excellence, which runs the West Coast Marine Trades Association. I'm a former member of this body, 10 years in the House and a partial term in the Senate, and I appreciate the protocol and procedures that we follow. But I also appreciate the fact that as an entity, it is important for this House and for the Senate, for the legislature, to look at public policy from the perspective of the entire state vis-a-vis the United States and vis-a-vis the world. And for that reason, yesterday, my office took a look nationally at what do ports do? And we could not find, there may be some somewhere, any public ports which operate shipyards. There are some federal ports which build some Navy and Coast Guard ships. But we do not see, in a global look at the United States, and again, we just did an ancillary search, where do we have ports that are operating shipyards? We don't find them. And then I want to make a distinction that Mr. Zimmer referred to. There's a difference between saying, here is our facility, here is our haul out, our lift facility, and we have personnel to pull your boat out, and you can work on it, you can hire someone to work on it, we may be providing the facilities to do the work, as opposed to, hey, we also are running the operation to repair the ships. Moving on to that, how about running the operation to build ships? This allows the construction of ships by a public port, and there's no restriction on size. It can be anything from jet skis to 150-foot vessels. There's no limitation. The public policy question this committee needs to address is, do we want to amend this statute to open the door to the actual language that is in the statute to allow our public ports to acquire, construct, maintain, and operate facilities for constructing, repairing, or maintaining any type of watercraft? We're not talking about emergency repairs. We're not talking about specific situations. And the reason I bring this up is I'm not into a discussion about the Port of Toledo versus Fred Wall Marine versus whatever. I've just been starting to talk to folks on the coast about what is the proper role of ports. I do think this bill introduces another question. I think the legislature needs to take a comprehensive look at the role of our marine ports, the failure of the state in many instances to provide enough support to our local ports. We've seen that in terms of infrastructure issues. But without getting too far into that, I want to pull myself back and talk about a few other things here. This statute was meant to detail the authorizations for ports. It's very precise, so I think the committee needs to be careful about being precise. I did offer up an amendment. I don't think it has enough popular support, so to speak, where you could be precise about saying it's okay to have out those haul-out facilities, but no, you're not going to run a shipyard in the sense of building boats. There's that factor. I do ask the committee to consider the competition factor. I pull government grants out of this. Government grants, when they're done, should be done to support building infrastructure, and we already have infrastructure being provided by the public ports. So a grant to a private player to build some more infrastructure, I mean, it gets pretty hazy as far as I'm concerned. But from a policy perspective, we need to get back to what are we authorizing our ports to do. The competition factor, you saw that graph that Jonathan Mike put up there, and I would not throw anything at my good friend Representative Gomberg about a kite shop. I'd simply say that ports don't pay property taxes on real estate. They don't pay personal property taxes. They don't pay income taxes. And while they have a bottom line, they need to come in, operate in the black. Those are substantial competitive factors when it comes to building ships and repairing ships. They also, in the cosmic scheme of things, have lower insurance rates because they get the Oregon tort liability restrictions for public entities, some protection from liability, and they have pooled insurance. So they're able to save some money on cost factors. But I want you to look at this in the context of the private sector. What does an investor do when they look at this new statute? Hey, I was thinking about building a boat yard somewhere on the coast, and now, when I'm looking at the investment, do I invest when that port to the north or that port to the south is now authorized to operate a shipyard? That is a concern. Or I'm operating a shipyard right now. You heard from Mr. Cox, Ray Cox, and am I going to invest more in my facility when I know the rug can be pulled out from under me? These are concerns that need to be addressed. Again, I don't think that the amendment I shared with committee members yesterday has got traction. I would invite you, though, to take another look at that because I think it solves some of the issues that come up here. And finally, would you please take a look at the success that we already have in Oregon? You heard about some of the deadliest catch boats. I looked it up. Time Bandits. You ever watched that show? Maverick, Cape Caution, Arctic Venture, Nuka Island, Westling, Vixen, all built by Oregon, Southeast Oregon, private shipyards. The West Coast steel hull fishing boat statistics for boats over 50 feet in length, if you sort them by builder from 2006 to 2016, out of 36 on the West Coast, 21 were built in Oregon by private shipyards. 9 in Washington, 1 in Alaska, 5 in California. What are we doing to enhance the capability of those shipyards to continue to compete and to do better for Oregon? So, as I wrap up my five-minute time limitation, I thank you for your consideration. I do urge you to consider the greater public policy issue that you're dealing with in this bill.
Thank you so much. Do we have questions for the panel? All right. Yes, Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank all the people that have testified today, particularly those that have come a long way. And it's good to see my old friend, Representative and part-time Senator Mannix here. My question, Kevin, is this. You talked about competition. You talked about public policy. Are port-operated RV parks or marinas inappropriate by your definition? And if not, how is that different than the shipyard we're discussing today?
Madam Chair, Representative Gomberg, it's a very good question. I would think that if you're looking at that specific kind of operation, first of all, they seem to have been authorized. But second of all, if they were authorized, it should have been the context of special needs for a special area. Is it an isolated port area where you need to have a marina that's operated by the port? I do think that there is the opportunity to look at the special circumstances that cause this. We do have ports that are isolated. And so there are times when you may allow that kind of activity because the private sector can't do it. But if you have the private sector already doing it, why go there?
Thank you.
Representative Clem, did you have a comment?
I wanted to ask a question. So, Kevin, you may or may not remember this statute. Who knows, with your prolificness, you may have authored it. The higher ed system has a process whereby programs that are about to be offered by a public entity are first put out for kind of comment or review. It's called the adverse impact law, and it says, is there anybody out there who opposes the creation of this new program by a community college because you're already doing it? Nobody says anything, then it just moves ahead. If somebody says something, then I think it's the Board of Education or the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Think about, okay, you know, do they have a monopoly? What's their price? They factor in before they allow the public competition to move forward. But it's sort of by default says, yeah, you can do it, but there's a way for the private sector to say, hey, wait a minute, in my particular 50, it's set up in 50 square mile regions. I'm within 50 miles and I think it's going to hurt me. Is that something that might be a reasonable way to look at this, where clearly there's some places where the private sector is not serving it, and while we philosophically may want them to, if nobody does, nobody does, and that's the problem I think Toledo is facing.
Madam Chair, Representative Klein, I appreciate the question. No, I did not help write that one, but I was involved in a discussion. I have been involved in a discussion relating to higher education. And actually, that describes a process where you identify necessity and you address the necessity issue, which could apply to marinas and RV parks and everything else, and you determine whether or not there is a private sector player that can appropriately address the need. And if you use that process, then you know that, hey, we really need to do this, and this is the only opportunity we have. I think that process would be perfect for this.
Thank you. Did you have a question?
That's
sorry, I didn't see that.
Sure?
Okay. No. Oh, you said you do or no?
I do.
Okay, please.
Thank you. I also appreciate Mr. Cox and all those that have taken the time to come up and discuss this issue. And Mr. Cox, you had mentioned the 41 contractors.
Yeah.
That provide services at the Port of Toledo. I would say that the Port of Toledo is trying to offer, or is, you know, contracting out the services. Obviously, there isn't much for the five to ten employees that the portmaster or port manager had spoke out before, except for probably doing the hauling of the ships, or, you know, moving, you know, bringing the ships on land. I do have a question for Mr. Zimmer. You mentioned that that the company moved to Reedsport 27 years ago.
I believe, we celebrated 25 years last year or the year before.
So what has the company been doing for the last 27 years?
Building and repairing boats.
Oh. And so were they building? So they were building and repairing those boats when the company sold the equipment, infrastructure, and materials to build and repair boats to the Port of Toledo.
Yes, that would be true.
Thank you.
Okay, great. With that, I think we will thank you, gentlemen, for being here. And one moment, please. We're going to take a 5-minute recess, 3-minute recess, and reconvene.
News alarm on it.
All right, we're going to come back from our brief standing at ease, and we are going to open a work session on House Bill 2902. I would welcome a motion from my vice chair.
Chair Leininger, I move House Bill 2902 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Brocksmith moves House Bill 2902 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We're going to have an opportunity for discussion, then we'd like to do a roll call vote so that members can weigh in with comments on this, please. Is there discussion? Representative Marsh.
Well, I don't know much about ports. I have no ports in my district. But what I do know is that ports are governed by commissions, members of the community essentially public officials. And I have a lot of faith in the ability of those public officials to make decisions that are the best for their communities, to weigh different factors, to step in when they need to step back when that's the best decision for the community. And so I'm comfortable with the language here that expands the potential for ports. Doesn't mean they have to do it. Does mean that they have an opportunity to do that if it will benefit the community.
Okay, thank you. Representative Clem.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm comfortable voting for the bill to give the latitude to ports to do these activities. I would be interested in having an additional conversation about potentially doing some sideboards, like what I described, where there's a process put in place. I don't feel it's necessary to stop this bill to do that. It can be done in another bill. I can use one of my bills to start that conversation. Often we have to decide sometimes in this job when you have a lot of bills that need to move, whether to try and deal with it all right here, come along with a follow-up bill, ask for it to be dealt with in the Senate. I mean, one question I still have is, if there's no one really wanting to actually build ships, maybe that part of this bill could be changed. But I'm okay. I think former Senator Mannix knows current Senate President Peter Courtney quite well, and may want to engage in further conversations as this bill moves through the process. But I'm okay voting for it, knowing maybe we can talk a little bit later about what limitations may come with the authority.
Great. We have Representative Helm and then Representative Post, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was, while we were off the record, I was expressing my concern about the port of Beaverton. So I have to also disclose that I don't have a port in my district, although the Hillsborough Airport is nearby and is part of the Port of Portland. My concern is this. Often government is the last resort to keep economic development afloat. And the example of the Port of Toledo is pretty persuasive to me in that we had a need there for just support at a critical time, and there was nobody else to do that. And, you know, I like having the free market work for us when it can. When it can't, and there's no other alternative, that's what government is for in my mind. And I agree that it should be limited to reasonable activities. And those reasonable activities could include doing some things that stabilize the financial health of those entities over time so that they don't go up and down, so that they are always there to provide the support services for the private businesses that we so value. So that's where I'm coming from here, and I think I'm inclined to vote for the bill because of that.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Post.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am as well thinking some of the same things that Representative Helm said and what has already been said. I want to make sure that I get on the record saying I have some heartburn with the contradiction in my mind that there has been with this public funds issue that's been discussed and talked about quite a bit today and before today. I'm concerned with the future of private versus public happening all over Oregon. That has me greatly concerned that this bill could open that up. That's been brought up in testimony. That bothers me quite a bit. But on the other hand, what I'd like to do is I'd like to rely on the wisdom of the entire House and perhaps the Senate committee that would get this should it pass, and the Senate itself. So I don't want to be the one to hold this up from a further discussion. So I'm going to go ahead and want to move ahead with this.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
I'll be real quick. I concur with Representative Post and Representative Clem and Representative Helm on their comments as well. I'll vote for it, but I'm a private sector guy first. I believe the private sector is far more efficient than public sector, but in these communities where there is no private sector entity to carry out that task, that's a real problem. So,
okay, thank you, Representative Foxsmith. Representative Gonenberg, did you have a comment? Or
I've made several comments. Okay. I think I'm good. Right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Foxsmith.
Thank you, and again, thank you all for coming, and I agree with all of my colleagues' comments up here earlier. I'm, you know, in a, I have a port, I have multiple ports, but I'm a private industry man myself. Again, we have a situation where there are 41 private industry folks that are providing services up there versus the public sector that is facilitating, more so for liability reasons alone, the hauling and moving of the vessels so that private industry can step in and provide the services. But I wanted to reiterate one of Representative Marsh's comments that was lost in this conversation, really, until she brought it up, and that is port districts elect port commissions that are members of the community that all of you have everyone has the ability to run for and also discuss issues with. And so, you know, and I apologize for not thinking about that before. Like county commissioners, like representatives, like city councilors and mayors, we all work together. I know that, in fact, in my community, one of our port commissioners is also a city councilor, and it works very well because they're able to you know, run lockstep. So thank you, Representative Marsh, for those comments. That's all.
Great, thank you. Do we need a roll call vote, or is it okay to do a? Do you have anything you'd like to say, Rep. Lewis, or are you fine for now?
Jack.
We're fine. Okay. So I don't see that we have a need for a roll call vote, and I will proceed in this manner. So we have a motion from you, is that right? And I restated it, and we were having discussion. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection to the motion to move this bill forward with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, the motion carries. And Representative Gomberg, could you please carry this bill on the floor?
Madam Chair, thank you for the fine conversation here and for the excellent testimony. I'd be happy to carry this.
Thank you very much. Now, before we adjourn, so I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2902. Before we adjourn, I want to draw to your attention a follow-up item on a matter we talked about before. We talked about the Oregon State University Fermentation Center and the Oregon Food Innovation Center, which is connected to OSU and the Extension Service. They have capital requests in, investment requests into Ways and Means for this coming year, and we have the opportunity to sign onto a letter that could originate from our committee that endorses the idea of the Ways and Means Committee looking closely at making those investments on the theory that it will support economic development and job opportunity in our state. So I wanted to flag that for you. I believe that Mr. Crawford is going to bring that letter around and give you the opportunity to consider that. So with no other business before the committee, we're adjourned. Thanks. All right. Thank you. That was